Chase a white rabbit, Alice. Chase a white rabbit. That's what we do with Late to the Game, except instead of Alice, it's Marie, and she's there running and skedaddling as she's trying to find these lost movies that she can watch before everybody else makes fun of her.
That cashew butter on my tongue.
Like Chewbacca, Chewie?
Well, that was like fun, and then it got deep.
Hold on your butts.
From movies to video games, welcome to Marie Plays It All. Today's episode is A Link to the Game, where my co-host Dandelion in his sunburst yellow hoodie, where he forces me to watch popular movies I embarrassingly have not seen. I'm promoting Ouija boards made by Mattel. Go get it. Contact your dead ancestors today.
Where all souls are sold.
Damn,
that's so many meanings. Sally sold souls at the local seashell where she sold souls, where she sold them. She went soul searching. So when people are like, oh, I'm going soul searching, you know, you always think like, oh, I'm trying to redefine who I am. I'm wearing like the whole live life laugh, you know, sign that I'm hanging on my wall. No, when Susan is going soul searching, she's looking for souls. She's literally thriving and ripping out of the bodies, and she's going to sit there and sell to you in the compact. And that's the Ouija board clothing brand that Miss Marie is wearing.
Anyway, this is Late to the Game.
In case you didn't catch it, it's Late to the Game, baby. In case you haven't caught the theme to Late to the Game, that's what we do, where I make Marie laugh as much as humanly possible while we talk about ridiculous movies and make her watch stuff that she's never seen, where I ask her a series of 10 questions that she has to answer before she watches the movie. Then we go watch it, come back, and we get to see how right and how wrong she is. And when she's going to play it back, or she's going to rage quit. So we're going to find out what this movie is. Are you ready to find out?
Can you hear
Take
that?
A drink. Let's do a drink to find out what it is.
Cheers. Okay.
All right. So this is one that's going to be a little bit on theme with the alcohol drinks that we're drinking. It is called After Hours. So the name of this movie is called After Hours. It's one that I mentioned before, and I'm watching Marie's little face scrunch together right now because she's trying to decipher any kind of clues that she remembers that I said about this, even though she doesn't recall me ever mentioning it at all. But nonetheless, I mentioned After Hours, and we are finally going to make her watch it, people. And for us listeners, for those of you that hasn't seen it, I highly suggest you watch it during our commercial break. But first, we're going to hit you with a pop quiz hot shot. All right. First of all, what's the movie about?
The movie's about a group of people, and they are in a, where are they? Store. And it's after hours. It's closed. It's closed now. And they are all hanging out. I'm just imagining like an Empire Records type thing where it's like everyone just like really loves chilling in the store. What kind of store is it? It is going to be a like Trader Joe's.
Yeah.
Like none of them want to go home. They have like families and they have other lives and they're like, oh, I just want to stay here. And other people are like, well, I can't go home because my roommate, like everybody's lives when they leave this Trader Joe's.
You got anything?
They don't like.
You like picked your teeth and you looked at your finger. I'm like, did you get anything?
No, I didn't get it.
You're going soul searching.
My soul is small enough to fit in between people's teeth. So the whole movie is just them talking. That's the movie. It's After Hours. And it's like a very like conversationalist.
Movie. So it's very Kevin Smith-ish.
Movie. Yes. And when you ask me who directed it, I'm going to say that.
This movie is not a well-known movie for which well-known director. Listen to that again. This movie is not a well-known movie for this well-known director. Look at the way that's worded.
I feel like it's written talky, soberly. So... I don't think I was going to. Is it Kevin Smith? Because did you just slip up?
You said that. You're the one that said it was wordy. I was like a Kevin Smith movie.
Yeah. Okay, here. After Hours. It is trying to think of one other director's name.
You're trying to think of a director's name outside of Kevin Smith. And that's the name that I provided you just about 3 seconds ago.
You know what I do before we go on this?
You research names on IMDb.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm just like popular directors, and I look at and then I go through lists. Okay, there was like obviously Martin Scorsese. I always say it wrong. There's Francis Ford Coppola. There's Ridley
you gave
Scott.
Two
I said it wrong.
Shots and you're wrong twice.
Whatever, Kevin Smith. Let's just go. Smith. I think it's talky. Okay.
So here's a little fun question for you. All right. The lead actor was in a movie that I made you watch on Late to the Game.
So I'm saying Vince Vaughn. No, Vince Vaughn.
I was like, when did I make you watch a Vince Vaughn movie? So you had to research directors, but actors you don't need to research. And Vince Vaughn's the one you come up with. I love it.
No.
Vince Vaughn and Kevin Smith? Sure.
No. I'm going to say Billy Zane.
So what movie did I make you? Oh, Demon Knight.
I think about Demon Knight all the time. I think
As we
about
all
that
do.
movie all the time. I loved Demon Knight so much, you guys. Like I think about it. It just
All
randomly pops in
night
my head
long. I know.
all night. For some reason, when I thought of Billy Zane, I thought, oh no, when I thought Demon Knight, I saw Vince Vaughn driving that car with Hey Man, Nice Shot by Filter, just going, and I just, but no, it's Billy Zane. Just let me
See,
excuse
so
and say
we
that dude's name.
that was it. We created the show so that way I can make you watch like movies. We didn't know how many people were actually going to watch this. We had no idea. We ended up developing some people that actually liked the show. So like, shout out to you guys. Thank you for watching. But then it ended up becoming just Marie actually appreciating the fact that she gets to see Demon Knight. So this whole show was just revolved around Demon
Yes.
Knight, and it has nothing to do with the people that are watching this. It has nothing to do with the fact that I just wanted to force you and torture you into watching these movies. It's literally just about Billy Zane and Demon Knight. So,
Yeah, it's all
Billy
only
Zane,
Demon Knight,
you're welcome.
not like the like excellent movies are like Ex Machina or Jojo Rabbit or any of those movies that are like it was just Demon Knight.
That was it. It's one and only, Billy Zane. Okay, which Friends character is in this movie?
The actor, you mean, or the character? The actor.
Whatever. Let's say the character.
So what? Ross is gonna come in? Oh no, Chandler's gonna walk in to be like,
I didn't
"Could
say
this be any later?"
no.
Okay,
Not a
which?
Friends character that's in the movie, but if you want to name the Friends character this
Okay,
actor played,
no,
go ahead.
I know the actors' names.
It's not a
I know
connected
the actors
universe,
of
Marie,
Friends.
okay?
Okay, well, I don't know.
Calm
It could
down.
be a multi. Okay. Which Friends actor is in After Hours? I'm gonna say Lisa Kudrow.
Lisa Kudrow, okay. And just for fun, who did she play in the movie?
She plays Ursula. She plays Ursula. Because you know why? You know why I'm saying this? Do you know why I'm
Why?
saying this right now?
Why?
Because Ursula's character in Friends
Was
was
in
also in
Frasier. Oh,
Mad
was
About
it?
You
Mad About
as a
You. That's what it
waitress.
was.
And I think that she is going to be in this movie being like the Ursula character coming in to like get stuff for the restaurant that she works at.
They've had characters that have done cross references. But if Ursula is in this, then that would mean she would have been on three projects, which you would have to look at the scorecard and say that's probably the character that's been on the most crossover things ever, right? Or at least tied. Possibly. Like, how many of the characters have you seen on like three or four different variations of something else? They had Urkel, right? Urkel was on Step by Step, as we know, where he had a jet, like a jetpack that flew over there to the house, which was a ridiculous concept, but whatever. 90s, shout out.
Shout out to the 90s. 90s, you hear us? We love you. We love you, 90s.
What is the main character just trying to do? They're just trying to do something. Like, that's it. They're just trying to do something. What is it they're trying to do?
They're trying to cash out. They're trying to leave. They're like, let's get out of this store, you guys. And they're like, no, we're all having fun, just
Ring
chatting.
me up.
No, it's the boss. It's like the boss of the freaking place
Oh, it's the main character wants
who's
to
like,
go.
yeah, it's like, can we just go? And they're like, no, you understand. This is our hub. This is our hub safe space to be ourselves. And then before we go to our real lives, this is our little life that we have our own little bubble and we can say whatever we want. And this is like our little safe space. This is our sanctuary. Trader Joe's is my sanctuary. And the boss and the higher ups don't get that because they just look at the workers as like these little minions they don't even think about as real human beings. They just look at them like workers and they're like, I don't care about you and your lives and your souls. And they're like, but we do. And we all feel a community here. So communion. Wow. Yeah, as Steve said, we are going to church when we come here. We are kneeling and getting the body of Christ when we come here. He just wants to leave, and they're like,
Jesus.
no.
Okay, so the main character, what is he accused of during? Okay, what is he accused of during? During what? Come on, Daniel, what does that make? Okay, what is he accused of doing that requires a search?
Oh, stealing from the till. He's accused of stealing cash
And
from it.
people have to search for and try to find where the missing money went. And
So
he's the
this is
boss
where the
still?
yeah. Oh my
So
God,
he's
they're the
trying to
ones who are
feed like a
corrupt.
drug addiction?
Could be.
Gambling addiction.
And that's why he wants to leave so bad because he's like, we got to get out of here. I have got all this money stash on
All of
me,
it.
and they're like,
All
let's
of
just
it.
have fun. What's wrong with you? Like, it's Christmas Eve. We have nowhere to go.
Oh, now it's Christmas Eve. All of a sudden, you just snuck that in there. It could have been Halloween, but no. You wanted to go that
Oh.
way. Okay, I get it. All right. Fair enough. All right. Which famous comedy acting duo makes a surprise appearance?
Silent Bob and the Jay, Silent Bob. It's Kevin. It's Kevin Smith. It's Kevin Smith. So
thought you were gonna go Tenacious D, but you didn't. You went Jay and Silent Bob.
Okay. Well, because I remember
that. Well, Kevin Smith.
Yeah, exactly. Catch up. That thing. Good for you, Daniel. You caught up.
How does he escape the antagonist at the end?
How does who escape the antagonist at the end?
Our hero, our main person, our protagonist. How does he escape the bad person at the end?
It's a bad person. And the bad person has to be the boss, obviously.
Obviously.
So the protagonist caught on to the fact that he's like embezzling and taking money from Trader Joe's.
Does he work for security? Is it the security guy? Is he like just the poor cashier?
No, yes, thank you very much. No, Daniel. He stocks the shelves. He's the shelf stalker. Played by Stephen King.
Stephen King right back in a Mr. Milkman.
Yeah, so he's an undercover cop. The stock boy thing, and he's so unassuming by his look.
Stephen King, though, or is it the other actor that
No. It's not. It's not Stephen King. I just want to throw that in there. You know, he's like some like doofy guy. And then he knows, so he's like, it's like a social commentary on like the big high ups, like big corporations, and the low, like common workers, and like how they are the just ones and the righteous ones that deserve more. And then the big guys are all like corrupt, and they're like siphoning your soul while you're working there, and like it's stealing the money, and they're all money hungry. And these people actually care about people, and they care about side. Yeah, that's what happened. What was the question?
You're dead right. Now I feel like I'm just reading your Facebook posts. Okay. The man notices what on the woman he's trying to woo, and where is it located?
So basically she has a hidden camera brooch, and it's on her blouse. So this is Ursula coming in, and she's like this. Okay, if you've seen Ursula's character in Friends or Mad About You, she's like a very ditzy, like way more than Phoebe, like a ditzy waitress, like, huh, what? And she comes in, and you think that she's all unassuming, and you're like, oh, she's just a ditz. And the guy's just like looking at her chest, and he's like, wait a minute, what is with this brooch?
What?
And so actually, it's pretty shitty that she put that brooch on there, because obviously he's gonna look at that. She should have put it like, you know, in her soul where men never look.
Susie keeps stealing them right at the damn beach. The soul searcher keeps over there stealing these souls. So like, how are the men supposed to look when their soul just gets sucked right out of their face?
So wait, so he notices, he notices that the camera, and then she notices that he notices. Then when she's walking away to like leave the store, she's like turns all smart all of a sudden, and she's like, Old MacDonald, I think that we are spotted. The cowbell has been rang, and it's the boy stalking. He's the boy stalking the freaking milk. So he's Old MacDonald, and that's the code name. And then there's like, oh, the udder has been squeezed. And then you know, he's been caught.
You didn't have to say udder. You did not have to say udder. At the metal club, what are the patrons getting that our protagonist almost gets?
Metal club.
Like metal music.
Yeah. I mean, I put two and two together. I didn't think was like a metal works. Or welders go.
Literally could have been. Trying... It could have been.
Oh my God. I just thought about like a bar for welders. And it's like the metal works where sparks fly. And then it's like people are like, it's like a singles club where sparks fly. Daniel.
Cello. Movie written.
They are at a metal club.
Yes.
And the guy who works, the high up guy, owes these metal people money. I'm assuming that the people who are at the metal club are going to be like these bikers who are bad news. Because bad all news people who listen to metal are bad. No, they're not.
All of us.
They are like, so that's why the guy, like the boss is like, I need to get out of here with this money, because he owes the metal guys the money.
Mm.
And they're just like, dude. So there's like, you see the shots of in the Trader Joe's. And you see, like, what a perfect cover for, like, this metal guy. It's like, I work for Trader Joe's, and I work for the organic section. And it's like, but really, he's, like, this metal guy who, like, owes money for drugs.
Naturally, so, as they all do.
So, wait, what? What was the question? Let me make sure I got it right.
In the metal club, what are the patrons getting that a protagonist almost gets? So, the patrons at this metal rock place. What
drugs.
Yes. You're
getting, like, the big mother load of cocaine, and that's why the guy has the money, but he's almost gonna get it, but he gets caught with the chest brooch, and then the old MacDonald
Ursula.
Milk. Yeah,
Marie, We got a sale on aisle 7. Let's get this movie going. We got the Trader Joe's special. Let's get after hours situated and let's get the hell out of here so that way we can close the store.
I'm going to the metal bar, the metal workshop. Bye. Yeah.
It's our problem free. What? What? What?
Philosophy.
Woo! Hakuna Matata. If we had like a theme song for Late to the Game, I feel like Hakuna Matata would be one of them. Even though it's not like one of our favorite songs ever, it kind of feels like we kind of feel like Hakuna Matata, doesn't it?
Don't tell me what my favorite song is.
I think I just did. I think I just did. It's what that or it Chocolate Rain.
Chocolate Rain, possibly Danger Zone.
Ooh, I feel like Hakuna Matata though fits our vibe more because we're both just like just freely, just all willy nilly, just floating, flopping around on this podcast, not quite making a whole ton of sense. Just trying to lightly steer on the questions. What was I gonna say? Contour?
It's so funny that you look at it that way, and you look at it that way because you're the one in control and in charge all the time asking the questions. And really, I'm not Hakuna Matata-ing it at all ever because no. I'm sweating and I have the worries for all my days when I'm on here and I'm stressed out to the max. And you're just like, I'm Pumbaa, you're Timon.
Yeah.
I'm definitely Pumbaa. I'm like, when I was a young warthog. And I'm
when he was a young warthog. All right, so you ready to get into these questions and this movie in particular?
Yeah.
Okay. So now if it's after hours, then what is it? Just are we so past the after hours that now it's just before hours? Like, do we just show up to the place and it's closed because it hasn't been opened yet?
Yeah, this is like the depressing hours where nothing's open, but you want to stay awake and you want to still party, but there's nothing to do, so you got to go home, and then you're like
3 a.m. Like the 3 a.m. So wishing hour.
Witching hours. That's what we're in. The witching hours.
The witching hour. Okay. Here we are with the witching hour. What is the movie about?
Okay. So the movie is about a man who seems like he is sick of the mundane monotony of office drone life. He wants to just live, and he meets a girl at a diner, coffee shop, and she gives him her friend's number, says she'll be staying there. And then he goes home and he's like, oh, I was bored, this mundane life. And then he calls the girl and then she's like, come over. And then he goes over and then the night spirals into something crazy. And that is what the movie is about, essentially.
Okay, good enough. The movie is not a well-known movie for which well-known director?
Martin Scorsese.
Holla. All right. The lead was in a movie that I made you watch. Which one was it?
American Werewolf in London.
That's right. Yeah. You can watch it here. Click the link there somewhere.
This one.
You see the episode, which is super hilarious.
Yeah, our second episode we ever did. Our
second episode we ever did, and probably the best episode we've ever done. We peaked and we never came back. No, that's a lie.
No, not yet. Mm-hmm.
If you had to guess which one was our best, or at least your favorite, would you say Troll 2?
Oh, man.
Troll 2 was a good one.
Well, and The Room. Was a good one. Troll 2 and The Room.
Oh, my God.
And but there's some like episodes that we did where I just like the first half, the stuff we said was so fun. I don't know.
Because the second half already peaked and I said I just came. It was the after hours.
The witching hours. The witching hours.
There you go. All right. Okay. Which friend's character is in this movie?
Phoebe's mom.
That's her name. Phoebe's mom. If you look in the credits, it says Phoebe's mom.
No, but I forgot the actress's name. Her name. Oh, Terry Garr. Phoebe's mom.
If you look in the credits, it just says Phoebe's mom in the credits.
Yeah. I noticed that, yeah.
What is the main character just trying to do? What is he just trying to do?
He's just trying to live.
Trying to live, and he's also trying to go home. Trying to get home. That's it. He goes there. He acts out of his role. Like, he acts a little bit out of character, and now he's just regretting every single decision of it, and he's just trying to go home.
Yeah. For the whole thing, he's trying to go home, and then at the very end, he says, I just want to live. So... the majority of the movie, he's just trying to get home.
What is he accused of doing which requires a search? What is he accused of during what requires a search? What is he accused of?
What is he accused of doing which requires a search?
Yes.
I know what you're trying to get at. Spit it out, Timon. Okay. He is accused of doing a string of break-ins in the area neighborhood.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So that's why he has the whole posse that's trying to search for him to kill him.
The posse mob.
Posse. Yep. How many people do you have for it to be considered a posse?
Mm-hmm. I would think 4.
Yeah, that's a fair number, 4. Because otherwise, it's just thrice of people.
Exactly. After a thrice, it's a posse. And I also say that thrice. Because when you play Red Dead Redemption, I think you need 4 people for a posse. And that's like the...
With Anthony Garland? Or what's his name? The characters?
Arthur Morgan.
Arthur Morgan. I was close.
Anthony Garland.
Actually, doesn't that sound like a rocker name? Anthony Garland?
It's a person. It has to be a person. That's a real person.
Oh, 100% it's a person. But it just sounds like a guitar player.
Let me look up Anthony Garland. Just hang on. Anthony Garland is a well-known porn star. So no wonder you knew who it was.
Who the fuck is Anthony Garland? That's a terrible porn star name.
Oh. I'm just kidding.
I was going to say it's a terrible porn name. That was funny.
No, but he's in Titanfall 2. He's an actor. Ophelia and Chasing Life. He's an actor. Not a actor. I just wanted to make you uncomfortable.
Me? Uncomfortable and late to the game? Okay. Which famous comedy acting duo makes a surprise appearance?
Cheech and Chong.
That's right. Which is very weird, right? When you saw them, like, what the hell are they doing in this?
Oh, it was like directed by Martin Scorsese. I'm looking at the cast and everything. I'm like, wow, this is a pretty good cast. And it's like Thomas Chong. And I'm like, what?
It was before he was Tommy. It's like, you're Thomas? Like, how sophisticated you are.
It's like they had to call him Thomas. I think it was Thomas because it's a Scorsese movie. So it's like, gotta be bougie. We gotta be bougie in this movie. Thomas Chong.
And that's the way he smoked his blunt on set with the pinky out. How does he escape the antagonist at the end?
He goes into the bar, and then there's this woman there, and the woman takes him into the basement of the bar and paper mache's his body. So he looks like an art piece, but really he's stuck inside there. And then they're like, oh, he's not here. And he so is there, stupid. But he's
so stupid.
Is it stupid? Because I looked at it very differently.
I think it's hilarious. I think it's so stupid that it's hilarious. Okay. The man notices what on the woman he's trying to woo, and where is it located?
He notices what he first intentionally thinks is a burn mark on her inner thigh, but then after she unalives herself, he notices that it is in fact a tattoo of a skull-ish thing with roses on it. Yeah.
Yes. At the metal club, what are the patrons getting that our protagonist almost gets?
A mohawk. Have you ever had a mohawk?
I did. I had a faux hawk, like in college, and I had it where it was like a kind of like a sideways one, and I had it dyed in the middle, and I did like a whole punk rock thing. So yes, I did.
If this video gets so many likes, we will just like 3. If this video gets 3 likes, Daniel will bring back the faux hawk.
If it gets 1 like, okay, this is Daniel's fun facts. Director cameo, Martin Scorsese shining a spotlight from a platform in the club. So Martin Scorsese is in the movie.
I thought that was him. Oh my gosh. I was going to say it. Yes, it was in my notes. So I wonder if that was him. I thought that was him. He's like shining it all crazy. And then later that's kind of like foreshadowing for the flashlights when they're searching for him in the streets. Matt, I saw this movie in this way. You'll see. Okay, go on.
I know. Martin Scorsese told Griffin Dunn to refrain from sex and sleep during filming in order to get a more realistic feeling of paranoia, which you could really feel.
Yeah. I mean, that's cool.
Tim Burton was the second choice for director after the producer saw Vincent. When Martin Scorsese became available after production delays on The Last Temptation of Christ, Burton, according to Griffin Dunn, gracefully bowed out of the project, saying he didn't want to stand in the way of Scorsese. That's interesting. If it was Tim Burton, man, this movie would have been so different. So different. Yeah. But I would have really been curious because this would have been a very different movie for Burton. But it was a very different movie for Scorsese too, though. So
yes, it was very different for both of them. It would have been like, what would their vision have been, and how would their visions have made it different? Ooh, okay.
Yes. A technique known as end slating was used to capture Paul's reaction as he enters the nearly vacant Club Berlin. Right before filming the shot, Griffin Dunne went to a bar around the corner, ordered drinks for the customers, then ran out without paying. The scene opens on him immediately after this had happened off camera. That's real life. Doesn't that make it so much cooler? Where it's like, oh, no wonder. Because when you see him coming in like all jittery and all that, yeah. The guy just went, bought a round of people with drinks and then left without paying the bill.
So oh, my God.
That makes it way like, cooler.
Yeah, that's method. That's method right yeah. there. That's
in the coffee shop where Paul first meets Marcy, an elderly couple sitting at a table to Marcy's right in an over-the-shoulder shot of the director's mother and father. Oh. It's like Moonland. What was it? Moonlanding? Yeah. No, not Moonlanding. Moonshining? What the fuck is
moon,
it?
Moonstruck?
Moonstruck. There you go.
Moonlanding.
Callback. Okay, that was it for the notes. Fun fact.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
Yep, Marie's notes.
Okay, that was it for the fun facts. And it is Marie's notes time after hours. Here we go. Oh, yes, I remember you mentioning this movie because of Phoebe's mom. I remember you, once I saw her, I was like, oh, this is when he's mentioned this movie. And I was like, what, when, what's this? And it's like, yeah, you mentioned it lots of times.
Yes, I did.
My first note was this classical music with the monotony of dull office work. Yes, love that. I just love that scene in the beginning. There's that classical music and he's just like, get me out of here. Second thing is this dude's unibrow. That was funny. Should have like cleaned it up a little bit, but I don't know, maybe add it to the character. Or maybe, you know, he's like, no, I need to refrain from having relations during filming this. So no one's going to, maybe if I leave the unibrow, people will be like turned off and they won't want to come on to me. And then I'll be like, okay, that's good.
Did he have a unibrow in American Werewolf in London?
I don't remember, no, but also he was in a lot of makeup for a lot of the movie. So I don't know. I don't remember.
That's true. But I remember like in the beginning, I don't recall the unibrow, but I definitely do in this movie. So it makes me think maybe he didn't have one. If anything, you figure he would have one over there just because, you know, werewolves and extra hair.
This is the deepest thing we got to get into is why the unibrow in this movie and why not in that movie? Thoughts, comments, people.
Our listeners need to know this. This is movie theory, people.
It was noteworthy. I mean, because I look at movies and I'm like, everything has a purpose. What is this for? What does this mean? What's the underlying? Okay, we'll get into that more. And then the other note was, want a massage? Ha ha ha, please. Offers this chick a massage who he doesn't know, which lead me to say, is this a dream sequence? Because this seems way too far-fetched and dreamlike to be anything remotely in reality. So from this point on, him asking this stranger woman who he's never met before if she wants a massage and she said yes, I'm like, this isn't real life. This has to be something else. So this is either a dream. So I'm watching this movie now that it's a dream. This is in my mind. But then I'm like, wait, maybe it's not a dream. It's something else. But we'll get into that.
Okay. But you also see, though, because I want to touch on that, is he's so weird and she's so weird. That's why when you see these weird, like, she's such a strange person, as you see, like, they don't feel like real characters to a certain extent. And that was completely deliberate, especially with her, because she feels like, so even when he's interacting with her, her responses and stuff just doesn't make any sense, like, from a social standpoint. So even he's just like, what? Like, this doesn't make any sense. Like,
yeah. No one in this movie is responding correctly or properly or anything. Like, everything is, he is the most like sane one in the whole movie, which makes me feel like it's his dream or this whole thing is taking place in his subconscious. But anyway,
it could also be from his point of view, and everything feels so like heightened, you know what I mean? Almost like a nightmare to some extent, where like things seem so scary and social anxiety riddled.
Yeah, that's what I'm okay.
Okay.
Yeah, we're on the same. Okay. I also noticed all of the black and white in the movie. He ends up in an wardrobe change where he's just now in a black shirt and white suit. There's the checkered black and white pattern pillows. There's a checkered black and white bed. There's a couch. There's garbage bags lined up, black, white, black, white. There's a curtain. There's a whole building. There's newspaper is black and white. And then he has this red tie sometimes. So I'm like, what is the meaning of this? So I'm thinking like the whole black and white thing. I don't know. But it clearly was in there for a purpose. And I'm thinking, why? I don't know. But maybe we'll get into that. Okay. This is when I start to think this is a maybe definitely a dream, because numbers are always jumbled. He can't phone anybody. He keeps trying to phone, and then people's phone numbers are too short, or he's trying to phone and dial a phone, and then Catherine O'Hara's character is stopping him from dialing a phone number. And that's a thing about dreams, if you know that, that you can never call anyone or do like, or even spell or anything in a dream, because your brain just can't compute that way. So right away, I'm like, is this a dream? He can't call on the phone. Time is all messed up. There's some scenes you see that are sped up. There's some times where people look sped up. So I'm thinking, first of all, it could be a dream. Second of all, if it's a dream, this is all your subconscious thoughts and fears, but also your desires, unless this is just someone, this movie's like someone's interpretation in their mind of everything that they're thinking in social situations, that like nothing is actually happening. It's like all how he's interpreting. This is how he's interpreting all this gay stuff. No. So anyway, there's a lot of like homosexuality things. I don't know if that's like something that men think, like, oh, could I do that? Or like, oh, is that guy actually hot? Oh, am I actually homosexual? Like, I don't know. That maybe is a subconscious thing. There's dark fantasy type things, like this woman's dead, but you want to take her blanket off to like look at her, and like, you know, it's wrong, but that's something that people would think to do, like, well, let's check it out, you know. But like, do you do it? No, but that thought will probably go into your mind. Same with if a chick's like, my shoulders hurt, first thing that would pop into someone's head is, well, I'll give her a massage, you know. You don't say it, but that's something that people would think. So this seems to be like an act, like all these acts that are happening, everything that's happening around him are things that you either think about but don't do or say. A lot of things that are like inappropriate, like him trying to like break the law and like hop over the thing in the subway. It's like, he's like, I don't know why I just did that. Like, I wouldn't do that. And like, he's trying to like fight, like yelling at people, getting mad, having angry outbursts. It's things you don't do, but you would want to do. Also the fear of like being poor and without money, like the whole movie, he has no money. And that's like adding to the anxiety of everything. Wanting to fight and be reckless or break the law, angry outbursts, his fear of burns and fire, being chased, dark sexual fantasies, childhood trauma, possible mommy issues. He's calling for his mom when he's trying to get into an apartment. There's an ice cream truck. There's this woman looking like she's from the 60s. Like, I just feel like it's either he's dreaming and it's a nightmare and it's all of his insecurities and like past traumas and like deepest fears and desires coming out in a dream, or it's all his internal thoughts and what's going on in his brain all the time during this like mundane, monotonous life he's living while at work. But he has all this inner turmoil, and like, those are all of his feelings. I really was like, watching this.
And then it's funny that at the end too, he ends up back at work, which a lot of people's dreams are, right? Like, you're always back at work or whatever it is. So he even ends up back there again.
I said, every woman in the movie that he encounters, except for the artist woman, all look very similar. Like, they all have the blonde hair and the blue eyes. They have certain like style to them that all looks similar. So I'm like, is this like mommy issue stuff? And then at the end, when he's with that older woman in the basement, he puts his head on her like she's cradling him like it's her son. And then when she is putting him in the plasticine or whatever it's called, she's
papier-mâché.
Getting him all papier-mâché, thank you, papier-mâché, the newspapers. I was like, is this like a metaphor for being trapped in the newspapers, that being bombarded with the stress of the world? His hands are on the head. He's like trapped in by like the weight of the world. And he's stuck in this world with no voice and can't turn his head and he can't live. He's just stuck. And the newspaper is just like everything happening in the world around him. He's confined in that and he's like stressed out and he can't get out. And then when he finally gets out, he has the dust from it all at work. And that's like, to me, that's just like the dirt and everything of the world on you all the time. And you're stuck in this friggin' monotony of life. And there's all this going on inside you and you can't do it. And you're stuck.
Coworkers just go to work and like nobody pays him any mind, despite the fact that he's sitting there clearly disheveled. They all just go right back to work like nothing ever happened. You know what I mean? Like, no, nobody acknowledges them. Nobody notices like there's something odd with them. Everyone just goes right back to their world, not even paying attention to him.
That's what life is. And there's so much there's so many things about like the burn ward and like the and fire. Mm-hmm. There's so much like things about fire and burning in this. Even like the last song you put on the jukebox, the whole beginning of that song talks about a house on fire in a world up in flames. And it's almost like when he's sitting there at work, he has ash all over him too. And it's like the, like, it's all like the way of the world, and the world burning around you, and you're just covered with it all the time. And that's what people are constantly covered with, and no one around you cares. And like, it's just, that's what it's just like, that's what it made me feel of, just like feel of, that's what it made me feel.
You empathize with him to an extent, you know what I mean? Like, you understand why he's stepping out of his comfort zone, but then everything's so scary and wrong. And even something like he's just trying to take the train, or, you know what I mean? He's trying to take the train home and he doesn't quite have enough money. And the guy's like, oh, it just went up. When?
Yeah.
At midnight. And he looks, it's like 1 a.m. and he's just like, oh, come on. Like, you can't even cut me some slack here. And the guy's like, nope, we have principles around here. So it's like, it's things like that where it's just like nobody's giving him slack at all. But even when he calls the roommate of the girl and they're at that club, so he goes over there and like they're already gone, right? Like, it's always like, you know, when you're in your dream, like you're always chasing things and things.
Yeah.
Like unrealistic time constraints with things. Absolutely. There's a lot of metaphors. I saw this. So of your two theories, the dream one makes way more sense to me, because I thought of the same thing about it could be his point of view and all that. But the actions, like even when he's running, you know, with the taxi driver, you know, he's running, you know, with all that. It has way more of a dream feel to it than anything. Like even them with the mob and they're going after him and it's in a ice cream truck. That seems very unrealistic. Like that doesn't seem like an ice cream truck. Like there's a comedy to that, even in, but it wasn't presented in a way that was a comedy. You know what I'm saying? And then quick shout out to Kevin McAllister's parents in this. So they both were in this.
This is how Catherine O'Hara and John Heard met, and then they got married, hence Home Alone. I have that as a note. I'm like, this is how they met. This is their origin story of them being a couple.
So he sold the bar, and that's how he bought the big old house. He bought it. Huh? He sold it at a perfect time.
He's like, guess what? I can also sell my ice cream truck franchise, and look, we're millionaires now. And then, see, maybe her business was more profitable, and it seems like he's the one who was rich, but really, she had this ice cream truck franchise.
Exactly. It's and then money. They had the bagel paperweight. So, again, another plant and payoff where they talk about, you know, he originally calls that girl to get the bagel paperweight, right? Mm-hmm. And then we find later the one that actually makes them. So then it's like you keep seeing as it goes along, it's unrealistic that he would come across the people that do this. So that's why to me, everything felt like a dream to me. It felt like somebody that so badly desires to be crazy and zany and out there, but then the deepest fears of it, like going absolutely dreadfully wrong. He, in his dream, he has his dream of this woman, and you think maybe it would be like sexual, but it's not. It's massage. You know what I mean? Like there's something very playful about it and innocent. So even when you talk about like the gay innuendos, you could see that with his character where he's always been, you could tell he's not a very testosterone masculine type. So there's maybe always that idea or fantasy, or even maybe he was teased about it. Somehow it bled into his subconscious about it where you see that. So in his dream, his love interest was a woman, but even in his dream, it wasn't procreating with a said woman. So it's funny how he kind of tries, but it's so awkward and weird and all that. And even his dream woman is somebody that's so socially awkward and very odd and weird and all that stuff. So it ties into everything. And even when he meets her, she's reading a book, so showing intelligence, but she's the one that kind of makes him move a little bit on him. It's not even him going and wooing her and all that. It's her doing it, because that would be a comfort level for somebody like him that's so socially awkward. And then the ending is so hilarious to me, where Cheech and Chong is driving off. He falls off. Everything just kind of breaks, and he just gets up, goes right back to his job, sits down, and then everybody just goes right back to work. It's so ridiculous to me. That's where I laughed out loud the most, is that ending, because it's so ridiculous to me, but it's hilarious. Like, there's a lot of metaphors and things you can see with that, but it's just, it's pure kind of like pratfall comedy to me.
It's like a dark comedy, but it's also like, I think it's like super, the root of it all is like a super depressing root. but adding like a dark comedic layers to it. And I don't think anything that happens in this movie is literal. I don't think any of it's actually happening. It's either a dream or it's either a living waking nightmare that you're living in all day, every day, and you're constantly thinking about and hindered by your fears and your desires, but everything's holding you like back, and all you want is to live that way. But even if you do, it's like you can't win. It's just like the society's against you. There's like inflation with stuff constantly. Everything's against you, and you're just stuck. I don't know. It's funny. It's like a dark comedy funny. But I was just like, oh man, that's deep though. Like it's dark. It's dark, but they make it light. They make it feel light. They make a dark, depressing subject feel light.
So let me ask you the question then. Is this a movie that you will play back, or are you going to rage quit it?
I didn't hate it. But like, I find that a lot of Martin Scorsese movies have such a dark, cloudy, one-time watch vibe to me. Even if there's lightness to it, it's just, his movies feel very, very heavy and very, they stress me out. I don't know what it is, but there's something about maybe the filming style. There's something about all like the context of his movies that make me like, all right, like they're not like a, put this on, it make me feel good. So I don't know if I'll play it back, but I do, I'm glad I watched it.
Yeah, so I think with Scorsese, like what you're talking about is like it feels so heavy because I think a lot of his movies feel realistic. Like the stuff that the characters are going through feel very realistic, and it feels like stuff that maybe we might have thought of or stuff that we might feel. So there's a realness to his movies. It doesn't feel so Hollywood. It doesn't feel so movie, if that makes sense. So Spielberg, as I mentioned a million times, sometimes when you watch his movies, it's almost like there's like a glass between you and the movie where it doesn't feel so real. It feels almost like you're going to like a museum, right? Or you're going to like a, you know, like some kind of history museum and you see sculptures and stuff. So there's a barrier between you and what you're viewing. With Scorsese, it doesn't. It feels like the glass is gone and there's such a realistic approach to watching it, at least for a lot of his movies. I can't say for all of his movies, but that I think is maybe what some of it is. So when you see it, you see the true vulnerability of characters. So even when you're talking about this guy, you know, about his deepest desires, I mean, his fears and his nightmares and his social anxiety, you've mentioned many times on the podcast about your social anxiety and things like that. So it's almost like it's too realistic. And it's like, I don't want to sit down and watch somebody else's nightmares when I'm living my own.
Yeah. No, I say like there's like a grit to his movies, and yeah, like it's like a realism. Even if the situation isn't realistic, a lot of the way people react or act or think is like a realistic thing. And like you say, you don't feel as much like a viewer or like it's just for entertainment purposes. It's like, no, man, there's meaning to this. I know there's going to be, and I know there's going to be like some sort of, also a lot of his movies have a lot of like deep, dark stuff going on. So, and also if you are a person with like any sort of like anxiety or if you feel things or absorb, if you're an empath in any sort of way, you take that in and it sits with you. And so to watch things repeatedly that you feel so much, it just takes a lot out of you. It's like kind of draining. So it's like, I'm glad I watched it because I felt it really hard, but I felt it for enough for a little while now.
See, so for me, it's I completely understand your take on that, and I completely understand, like, I knew that was going to be your answer. I just knew it with the movie. But we view movies differently in the sense where I love watching movies like that. I love watching movies that make me feel something, even if it's an ugly feeling, because I think so far in few movies, especially more current movies, we don't get as many movies that have that type of, you know, power. So even take something like After Hours. Like, have you ever heard of After Hours before? Like, without me mentioning it, like, it's, you know, when they talk about Scorsese, nobody mentions this movie, but you still watch it and you see how powerful this movie is. And it's the most un-Scorsese-like movie I've ever seen. You know what I mean? It's like, it's so different and so unique. It's not the traditional Scorsese movie that we've seen. So I get a kick out of movies that make me feel stuff because I just think it's almost like a great feat by the filmmaker where it's like, hey, good on you, because I never normally get stuff like that. So when my emotions can be influenced like that by a movie, I tend to go back every so often to watch it because it's like, it's just a powerful piece. It's like going to a museum, you know, and when you go and you see like a bunch of different art pieces, there's some that you see and like you get it, and then there's other ones that are just emotionally drawing and pulling at you, where it's like it demands your attention.
Mm-hmm.
I love movies like that.
Yeah, I do too. I totally appreciate movies like that, most of them, as long as the subject matter sits well with me. Like I appreciate like the filmmaking aspect. I'm not saying I didn't like this movie. Like I liked it, but there's movies that maybe I don't like. And it's like if there's a food. So say tomatoes. Let me give you an example with tomatoes here, because you can relate, because you don't like them. Hate them. Okay, imagine you hate tomatoes. Okay, imagine I hate tomatoes. Tomatoes growing out of the ground, and I'm like, ugh, I hate this. It's not that I'm saying I hate the magic and the science that goes into everything in the earth and the photosynthesis and the sun and the rain and all the stuff that goes into making a tomato. I feel like it's magical. Awesome. That's like insane.
Mm.
But if that tomato tastes disgusting and leaves a bad taste in my mouth and makes me feel sick, I'm not saying I hate the earth that made it. I'm saying I don't like that tomato and I will not eat tomatoes anymore.
What you're saying is that we should never, ever watch Attack of the Killer Tomatoes, ever.
Too late. I've seen that. I've seen it. That was a childhood movie for me. But yeah.
Me too.
I go back to
that. I've seen it.
But yeah, I mean, it's just that I guess when I feel things so much all day, every day, every single day, that I love feeling things from movies, but I can't. I just can't go back to movies that are like that if they make me feel like in a bad way too much, because I already feel bad a lot.
I get it. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. You and I are very different people when it comes to stuff like that. So naturally we're going to gravitate towards different movies. So I don't normally live life like that, right? As we've talked about, I try to look at life more optimistic and happy and joyful and be dumb like the Stimpy in the Ren and Stimpy. You know, I try to live life like Stimpy a little bit, where it's just everything's like that and just bouncy. So when I can sit there and watch some stuff that's depressing, it's like, oh, that emotion does exist.
You know what, I haven't felt something in a while. I need to go feel something right now.
Let me go watch something that's not happy.
Thank you for watching this episode of Late to the Game with Dandelion, I believe your name was this time. Dandelion, what's your mug? You're a dandelion.
Oh,
dandy boy.
Dandy makes you under. Candy makes you dandy. There you go.
Randy.
And there's just some guy watching this episode, just a guy named Randy, like, oh, they're talking about me. What was the other one? Anthony Gardner, what'd I say? Anthony Gardner?
Garland.
Anthony Garland. There's a Randy Garland. There's got to be a Randy Garland.
Randy Garland is the porn star, and he specifies like Christmas stuff, and he has garland wrapped around him. He's a Randy Garland.
While he swings it. So on another episode, they need to see us coming up with our own porn names. We're going to be over here talking about porn stars. Well, we got to have our own porn names, but we won't do it on this episode. We'll do it on another one.
Subscribe for that, and if you want to see that, you can find more of our content on our YouTube channel, Not a Strong Start, and you can listen to us anywhere you listen to your podcast. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at Not a Strong Start. Like and subscribe and share and comment and let us know if you want to hear our porn star names. And you can follow me on Instagram at @MariePlaysItAll.
And you can follow me on King_Sangre.
Never stop playing and never stop eating tomatoes. Even if they're gross? No,
don't eat tomatoes. Stop that. No, let's not do that. No, but never stop swinging your garland around. In case you thought we were early, guess what? You're wrong. We're late to the motherfucking game.